This is where the ego comes into the picture, and it could be easy for them to get on the wrong track. Some soul groups often try to get their lost sheep on the right path before and after their crossing. Right now, positive things have happened, because humans are beginning to wake up more and more. Soul groups have succeeded in influencing their sisters and brothers on Earth into recognition. Many times, the result of this has been the formation of groups. There will come a new age on Earth, and then all these groups will keep the living traditions, the connection, and the fellowship with their kindred souls here going. In this way, many groups are formed that will strengthen the bonds between heaven and earth. The angels who are in the soul groups may also be connected to other planets. Does every human being belong to a soul group? The reader probably wonders. The answer is no. Have you ever asked yourself the question, who am I, and what do I want with my life? If you have, perhaps you have been sent down to Earth with a mission from the friends here. Accordingly, those who belong to a soul group originate from the angelic realm, and no one on Earth knows with certainty that they belong there. All the time it's a question of intuition, since the subconscious mind holds the ace of trumps. What can be achieved by an earthly soul group if some of them successfully find each other again? Answer: meditation, assistance in the form of healing, and conversation. One can imagine common actions of various kinds, and not the least, a network between the groups. It's difficult to give advice, since so few humans know that they belong to a soul group. But in the cities, this kind of work is badly needed. The cities destroy the humans. Slowly but steadily, a migration has to take place to nature and natural living. Nature plays a prominent part in the evolution of man, because if you live in harmony with it, you will have a keener ear for the messages that come from a soul group. In the angelic realm, the soul groups are designated with different colors or symbols. As I mentioned before, there may be quite a few members. But imagine that 7 or 8 people on Earth recognize each other and know they belong together. What then might occur is that one of the members claims that her best friend also belongs to the group, but the others will not accept this. In other words, it's not possible to form soul groups on Earth. Only an irrevocable, unquestionable recognition from within the deepest heart chambers of the two members is a solid sign of kinship. If a third party is added, this person must feel the same for the other two persons, and vice versa. It's slightly complicated, isn't it? Another important thing is the earthly misunderstanding of twin souls. Already during the last years of my life on Earth, in the 1960s, expressions like twin soul or dual or twin flame were popular. Let me give them a new interpretation that is used here. The members of a soul group accompany each other for centuries, well, even millennia, and they become inseparably interconnected to each other, whether they live here or on any other planet. Then what is more natural than that the recognition that occurs when two people of different sexes from the same soul group meet somewhere else than here, is interpreted as a proof that they are twin souls? Here all of us are twin souls, but I prefer to call it brothers and sisters. Duals are quite another thing. Every human being is a dual, that is to say a male and a female being, who seldom go down to Earth at the same time. I mentioned above that here all of us are twin souls. This was not entirely correct. Every individual keeps his or her individuality here. We are composed in the same way you are, and we often take our hereditary conditions with us when we pass over. One chooses their parents on Earth. It's a matter of being awake and having the power to resist all the negative qualities that exist in the genetic material. How many can do that, soul group members or not? It's not possible to describe how the rest of my existence elapsed for me in the bright, melodious, and loving atmosphere in the angelic pyramid. I again became one with my soul group. At last, however, we had to bid farewell to each other, since I still was a pupil in the angels' school. But Tsar comforted me. You will soon be reunited with your soul group, he promised. But in order to be able to describe your existence here to your readers, you will have to travel with us for a while longer. 12. Meeting with the Master Jewel Kule. There is an incomparable city in the ethereal world. It has been much talked and written about throughout the ages, and in most cases it has been called the Golden City. Not even Jilith's soft wings were necessary to bring us there. The Golden City Shambhala borders on the angelic realm, and as far as I can understand, this gigantic city forms a whole realm on its own. It is the center of the Great White Brotherhood and all other High Masters. Shambhala is the divine residence of truth, wisdom, and love. It wasn't difficult to get there, I just told you. I closed my eyes, and Zar took one of my hands and Shala the other. I opened my eyes and we were there. A golden haze surrounded us on all sides. Through the haze I caught a glimpse of tall, beautiful buildings that by far surpassed both the ancient Roman and Greek architecture. A while ago I had found the fantastic glass pyramid in the angelic realm an architectural masterpiece, but now I was standing in the middle of a city filled with such buildings. The streets were paved with a yellow, shining material that resembled gold. The colors and the shapes of the buildings varied, but each construction formed together with the surroundings an exquisite pattern. Fountains played everywhere, and multicolored flowers sprouted up from well-laid flower beds. Graceful flowering trees formed oases of shade and fragrance. There were benches and tables, and we sat down in an arbor. When I listened, I thought I heard the roaring sea in the distance. A silver-colored eagle fluttered high above our heads, and it made me think of the high mountains at home. You are always making comparisons with Earth, Shala scolded me. Here are also seas and mountains and forests, whatever you want. Shambhala is a piece of jewelry that has been placed in the heart of nature. But the city is also a retreat for the highly evolved souls. For instance Sananda, Melchizedek, Buddha, Lord Maitreya, Lord Mahachun, and many others. Don't some of them usually go down on earth and materialize? I asked. It happens occasionally, Zar answered. There are trustworthy individuals on earth who have experienced the blessed messages from the masters. What are they really up to? I asked, a little irreverently. Do they only meet here to talk about how terrible the humans are? Shala put her hand to her mouth. She always did that when she was giggling. If you could imagine all the work that is performed in this city, you would still not be able to grasp it, she said gently. The masters are extraordinary administrators. Together with the Great Spirit and the angelic realm, they are our hope for saving the earth. I cannot understand why Mother Earth hasn't already been saved. When such high and mighty powers are working with her, I dared to object. Come on, Jan, commanded Zar and gave me his hand. You and I must go on a trip together, and it seems as if it's time for that now. He took me to one of the nearby houses. When we got inside the gate, it seemed to me as if we were at a railway station. I couldn't see any rails, but there were entrances to several tunnels. This is worse than the underground in Stockholm, I muttered when Zar took me into one of the tunnels. I was thinking as I usually do, if one has to experience uncanny things, it's just as well to be already dead. How to materialize and dematerialize. I had a very definite purpose in bringing you to this remote place on Earth, where my old friend and teacher lives, Zar continued. Jan, it's time for you to learn materialization and dematerialization. You call yourself dead, although you are alive in the highest degree. There are a few people on Earth who can dematerialize their bodies and visit our worlds, but they are not many. It's more difficult for a physical person to learn this, but for you I hope it will be child's play. But it requires great self-discipline and lots of practice. To materialize for a while, as I have done now, is not that hard. The Master Jwilkyul once taught me how, and now I think it's your turn to learn this, too. Now? I stammered, may I learn this now? Of course, my boy, the old Tibetan said, and put his thin hands on my unphysical shoulders. Now, you must listen carefully to what I say, and do exactly what I teach you. Begin by relaxing, sitting comfortably on the sofa. When you dematerialize a physical body, you work upon your cells so that they transform into a particular light energy. We'll teach you to do exactly the opposite. What now followed is impossible to tell in detail, but I will do my best to account for the actual course of events. I continuously listened to the soft, guttural voice of Jewel Kuhl, who exhorted me to perform certain thought actions. It started with that I should imagine that my whole body, ethereal as it was consisting of cells, in this case light cells. He showed me the cell structure mentally, and I was requested to keep it in my thoughts. Thus I imprinted the cell structure of my body on my retina. At first I just saw it in light. The cells were distinct, but still they were made up of nothing but light particles. The light shifted to rose color and then to pale red. I still saw the whole structure distinctly, in the shape of my own body. I repeat, my own well-known body was like a compact, luminous figure, made of pale red cells. At the request of the master, I slowly formed an aura around this body, in the usual aura colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet. I saw myself as a kind of dummy made of cells and tightly surrounded by the aura. At the same time, I was the dummy. Now I lowered my frequency. It felt as if I was standing in the center of a vortex, which from its furious initial rotation slowly decreased into lower and lower speed until it stopped. An intense heat passed over me, and I was asked to put my hand in Zaz and then open my eyes, which I constantly had kept closed. This whole procedure seemed to last for an hour, but in reality it took only a few minutes. I stared at my hand, which felt different in Zaz's firm grip. I put the other hand on my heart and felt it beating. I was neither dead nor spirit any longer. The physical Jen was back on Earth again. And I felt really hungry. Both of my teachers got up and helped me up, and there I was, standing on trembling legs. I did not dare ask how long this event would last, I just enjoyed it. Or what was I feeling? Perhaps I imagined that I enjoyed being a living human again. But could I really be more alive than in my ethereal body? We went into an adjacent room, where a delicious vegetarian meal was laid out. I ate and drank with great relish, and I noticed that my teachers exchanged contented looks and had a hard time trying to keep a straight face. After dinner, you will have to return to your ethereal state, Jewel Kuhl said. The physical Jen must learn to go back to his non-physical existence, because that is your rightful place. By the way, how does it feel to be dressed normally? It had totally escaped me that I was dressed in a pair of light-colored trousers and a white shirt. On top of this, I was wearing a beautiful, embroidered waistcoat. This is the height of fashion right now, Zaz said, nodding when he saw my surprise. We have, of course, cheated a little and helped you with the dressing. You cannot learn everything at once, but we were actually amused that you did not notice anything. That confirmed that you were deeply concentrating on the cell formation. Now you will soon learn to concentrate as deeply on dissolving the cells. At first I felt a bit embarrassed, knowing that both masters had been having fun at my expense, but then we had a good laugh together. Time passed much too quickly in their entertaining company, and soon it was time for my current physical person to again place myself in a relaxing posture on the sofa. I tried to chew extra long on the last grape, but it did not help. Now you shall again imagine your body as consisting of pale red cells, surrounded by the aura, Jewel Kuhl said. It is very important that you see the aura distinctly. Visualize the aura colors, but also the magnetic field that is nearest to your body. It is like a field of pale yellow energy. The magnetic field belongs to your physical body. Constantly visualize your chakras and fill them with their respective light colors. See how your cell structure pales and turns into pure light. Pull this light the way I show you here, at first through the magnetic field and then upward through the whole aura. Then steer it inward until the aura has devoured the cells. Now only your light body remains. Do you understand? It was not easy to understand, but everything happened very slowly, and I concentrated a long time on the different steps. It felt as if I was sucked upward or inward, but I did not feel as if I'd vanished. I was aware of what was happening the whole time, and I constantly felt in my limbs and the rest of my body. Thus my body was still there, but it became increasingly lighter and more flexible. When you die, you don't know how the transition from physical body to non-physical body occurs. It was difficult to understand how my body could be buried in the ground and then become physical again in a secret place in Tibet. But now I was Jan again, an angel in a long, blue shirt. The body you had in your latest incarnation has molded away in the earth, the Tibetan explained, as he read the questions in my poor head. You had to give yourself a new physical body. It was natural for you to materialize a body that resembled the one you had the last time on Earth. This one was, of course, younger and healthier, because the substitute bodies that we for various reasons acquire must be in good condition. Not everyone can be an ascended master, even if ascension is becoming quite a popular word in terrestrial mouths. The time will come when some humans are allowed to leave Earth and bring their bodies with them. But that's another story. In due course, you will easily be able to move in matter and walk out of and into your ethereal body when needed, Tsar stated. But never count on a long visit in the physical world, your substitute body cannot manage that. You will have missions to perform, and after that you come back. I once saw a film called Lost Horizon, I answered. In the end, an ethereal woman followed her beloved back to the physical world, but at once she lost her physical body and aged 100 years in a couple of minutes. Now I understand why. Perhaps the author of the book and the film had more knowledge than what I imagined back then. Now I certainly choose not to return to Earth for any longer period. I am having such a wonderful time on the other side. Good. Tsar exclaimed with emphasis. Say goodbye to our host, and we will return home. 13. Back to Shambhala. Once back through the tunnels to Shambhala, I first thought that everything I'd experienced with the Tibetan was a dream. When I informed Tsar of my reflections, he just laughed heartily and told me that my experiences had been as realistic as a traveler in two worlds could wish for. I had passed the realms of dreams a long time ago, and the reality that the ethereal world offered seemed much more alive to me than the physical life upon Earth. When Sharla met us in Shambhala, I embraced her particularly sincerely, in order to feel where I really was. Laughingly, she loosened herself from my tight hug and said, "What happened to you? You have only been away for a moment. Did I still have so much left in me from the earthly Jan that I hadn't adapted to the rhythm of time here? Was my confusion temporary?" "Your reaction is completely natural," Tsar comforted me. "You have experienced something rather subversive, and your body has not yet learned to follow the dissolving and the restabilizing of the cell structure and vice versa. There are different levels of materialization. You have learned the first one. It has affected your mind temporarily, but you will soon get better. You cannot yet master one of the great cosmic laws to perfection, but it is a good start. DNA dwells in the genes, which dwell in the cells," I pondered. "DNA is my identity mark in my physical body. What identity mark do I have, on one hand in a body that I create but which really does not exist, and on the other in this ethereal body?" Tsar answered, pondering. "Good question. Substitute bodies need no DNA, because they are not permanent and not given birth to by a woman. Look upon the substitute body as a kind of robot where your soul resides temporarily and gives life to the physical structure. Your identity mark in this body is your monad, your immortal spark of life, the one you have seen floating in the cosmos at the beginning of all time. That is the most important identity mark that exists, January. Remember that. While we were talking, we took a walk on the golden streets. I was so deep in my thoughts that I had not paid attention to look around, when I suddenly discovered that we were standing in front of an enormous cathedral. Again, I thought that I had never before seen such a beautiful building. Not even the cathedral in Chartres, which is my ideal, had such clean lines, such exquisitely beautiful mosque-like roofs as this one. There are also beautiful churches in Russia, but this one topped everything I had seen. Such a stunningly beautiful church," I exclaimed, and took a step backwards. church? Charlo asked, and let her cheerful laugh to be heard. There are no churches here. This is the council hall.
The council hall? I wondered, a bit surprised. What a strange town hall.
No, the council hall, Zar corrected. It's the most important building throughout Shambhala. We have neither priests nor churches. I say again, what would we use them for? We all come from the Great Spirit. We are all His children. We are all brothers and sisters. In the council hall we meet when we have our consultations. Sometimes the Great Spirit joins us, on other occasions the Elohim and the Archangels come here. Sometimes the nine elders are visiting us from Sirius. Let's go inside, and you will see. It's impossible to describe what I saw. You cannot compare this house to a castle, whose gaudy interior and decoration are beautiful to a human eye. Why would I try to describe the most sublime of buildings, when words fail me? The reader must be content with trying to understand that colors, music, and scents can be united into something more than you can imagine, an atmosphere so sacred, yet so warm and full of love, that unaccustomed eyes are filled with tears. I have read about Shambhala, I have visualized it when I lived on Earth, but I never, ever came anywhere close to this. Shambhala is not only a golden city with lovely gardens and beautiful houses. Shambhala is inhabited by the highest of beings, if I now would allow myself to grade them. I knew that I wasn't allowed to stay in this paradise, but before I left it I got to experience meetings that forever were imprinted in my mind, no matter how ethereal it is nowadays. You arrive in a place like this with the leftovers of your rough, unpolished manners, those which you have brought from the coarse artistic circles at the restaurants Denjildenfruden and Konstnärsbuffen in Stockholm. You have sat in smoky artist dens discussing life, without having the slightest idea what eternal life means. You have drudged as a shopkeeper. You have mucked out the pigs for noble gentlemen while they sat drinking their evening brandy and soda, looking out over their vast estates without giving a thought to who is cutting their grass or tending their flower beds, let alone thinking of who was looking after their cattle in the pastures. Where is my beautiful native country heading right now, as I fall on my knees in silent admiration at the altar of beauty? Is there someone out there who understands? It must have cost a fortune to build this magnificent palace, escaped me thoughtlessly as we wandered around the halls. You should have learned about the power of thought by now, Zar admonished me austerely. The whole of Shambhala is created by powers that have absolutely nothing to do with economics, or slavery. The city is created for and by the masters in consultation with the Great Spirit. And it took place so long ago that your thoughts are unable to grasp it. I felt a little ashamed, and I wondered why I always would make comparisons with Earth. Perhaps it is because I am writing this book, and that way, I have a certain connection to my old life. We had sat down on a sofa for a little rest, and so my thoughts necessarily went back to dirt and envy. But suddenly a tall, blonde woman was standing in front of us. I recognized her immediately, even though it was so long since we met. It was Helia, the Spider Woman, the Earth Mother. Welcome back to the worlds of light, Jan. She greeted me. You have struggled for a long time on Earth, life after life, but now that work is completed, at your own request, you have been granted the immortality you at times sang about and longed for. Now you are allowed to create a future here with the help of your thoughts and readiness to learn. You are an adept of the masters and you belong to a soul group you know well and are used to working with. You will continue to do that, but no earthly life awaits you anymore. You wear the deep blue cloak, the one which characterizes those who will stay here. Only a few of your friends wear it, too. Your teachers have shown you Shambhala, because even if you will be domiciled in the angelic realm, you need to know the way here. It may happen that you must use your substitute body in order to materialize on Earth, but as long as you are an adept, you may only do it under our guidance. Zar and Charla will guide you and help you, as long as you need them. When you need me, you know where to find me. My home is in the angelic realm. She embraced me and disappeared as suddenly as she had appeared.
Soon after that, we left the magnificent palace. I felt more at home in the angelic realm than with the masters. I always had some difficulties bending my long spine, and even if that wasn't needed in Shambhala, I couldn't completely be myself there. The solemnity felt a bit suffocating. With the angels there is humor, warmth, laughter, and tears, all these things that a human is accustomed to. Everyone helps everyone, and all have interesting things to tell. You learn so many new things. My visit to Tibet was, of course, incredibly exciting, and I have nothing against another visit. The Tibetan master promised me that we would meet again, and I look forward to that. I have many more things to learn from him. It is from the angelic realm that I am dictating this book to my medium. According to earthly chronology, I have been here about 30 years, but days and nights here don't depend on sun and moon, and we don't divide day and night as you do. We live in the wholeness. Your Gregorian calendar does not suit the people of the sun and the stars. They lived according to a chronology that is more in accordance with the Mayan calendar. You ought to do that, too. But the way Earth looks today, close to the new century, you don't change time, no matter how changeable it is. I understand that you would like to know more about how I live here. I will tell you about it now. If you don't believe me, I suppose you must wait until you come here yourself. However, it isn't certain that you will experience the same things as I have. You may get an entirely different view of it all. In that case, I hope, for your sake, that it will be a positive view. The angelic realm is so big that it cannot be measured by earthly standards. Here everything is in perfect order, both when it comes to our way of living, nature, and working methods. Everyone gets their tasks, and I had to start from the beginning to learn the different ways of being an angel. The first thing I learned was to move myself with the power of thought and to create wings. We have an ethereal form if we like, or else we can emerge as merely light. Personally, I prefer to have a body, no matter how light and unphysical it is. Since my whole mental activity remains, it feels stupid to run about without a body. Well, that's my personal opinion, at least. I also would rather be able to see the person I'm talking to. So if somebody starts a conversation without me seeing a thing of him or her, I can become rather rude. I tell the person in question to show themselves or else. Well, I'm not going to be ignoble. Sometimes my earthly side gets hold of me. But here they understand and forgive straight away. I got to learn to meditate properly. It's easier here, my brain is somehow clearer. On Earth I often mixed up daydreaming and meditation, which was disadvantageous to the job I was doing at that point. Here meditation is regarded as work. Could you imagine, to sit comfortably alone or in a group and concentrate on helping individuals or the Earth, is counted as work. I like that, when the concentration among other things can produce wings that you can fly with, if you want to. What a happiness. I remember myself as a child, when I had cut out a pair of wings from newspaper. I was going to try them on behind the barn, where no one could see me. I paid no attention where the door faced, I just wanted to fly. When I jumped out in the open air where my wings would support me, I instead fell headlong into the dung heap. I would rather forget what followed. Now my wings support me, even if they just are a kind of substitute engine for my light body. Actually, they are not needed, but since creative power is given unto me, under certain conditions, I like to practice by taking a trip now and then. In reality, I only need to think myself to a place, and like a shot, I'm there. It's almost too comfortable. It was difficult separating from my guardian angel Jalith, but she was radiantly happy. She had been tied to her human, in this case, Jan, for such a long time, and now she was set free to work in another part of the angelic realm. One can choose if one wants to remain a guardian angel, but also when one wants to stop doing that and develop further in other areas. What kind of areas, the reader probably asks. I soon learned that the angelic realm contained the most varied fields of work. To the utmost possible extent, you yourself got to choose the area in which you had the most interest, But then you first had to get through an education or training that matched your personal wishes.